Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. It's getting a little hotter by the day, especially, well, I don't know, other places, but places like Windhoek, it's suspiciously becoming hotter by the day. So wherever you find yourself, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for picking us to listen to. Anyway, well, you know, if you are driving, just remember, fasten a seatbelt and obey the speed limit. You know, it's better to arrive late and get yelled at than not, you know, well, technically you will arrive, but in a casket. So that's whether or not that's, you know, falls under the definition of arriving. It's, you know, open up for the, I mean, it's open for debate. We're not here to talk about something as gory as the end of one's life, but we're here to talk about international trade. How all those words were put together for me to easily pronounce and sound very smart. International trade. Yo, this man is educated. No, he's not. He doesn't understand a thing. Just like you and I. Minus Dwight, because trade and marketing, business, and basically everything entrepreneurial, like on a technical level, that's his line of work. That's his field of expertise. But as for me, I just sit and ask a bunch of questions and do a lot of describe myself as research on these subjects, and it turns out it's amazing how much information you can gather on any subject over the internet or by visiting any library, and that's whether it's the traditional libraries as we know them, as in the structure, the ones that exist in a tangible world, or you could visit one that exists in an intangible world since we are now embracing the digital sphere. That digital sphere part of things is going to be part of our discussion today. Today we are going to be, for those of you that are regular listeners of Home Run, then you know that at some point, I think, I'm not sure if it was late last year or earlier this year when we were talking about how the country of Albania have set up, is being used as an excellent example of energy transition, albeit, it's more of luck than at least for them, because hydroelectricity energy generation as a form of energy generation is one that is considered green. Don't get into the technicality of where the metals come from. Believe me, been there, done that. That debate never ends. It's like which one came first, the egg and the chicken scenario that you'll be dealing with. At some point on, in the history of Home Run, here on Eagle FM with Helmut and Dwight, we talked about how Albania is one country. Now, this Albania is a country in southeastern Europe, and this is one of those, Eastern European countries. A lot of those Eastern European countries don't really make it, at least not in a good image, for the most part. The way that they are portrayed in, portrayed in Western media. And, before you start asking a bunch of questions, it's a family thing. Every family have its own, squabbles and, they go over it. But the thing is, Albania is one of those countries that is dominating in terms of, green energy methods generation, because most of its energy, about 90%, comes from hydroelectricity. And that's because they have a lot of surface water, something that we can't actually say. I mean, if we were going to adopt that method of energy generation, would really suck at it, because we don't have a lot of surface water, plus we're a semi-arid country, and we don't really have, we don't have the luxury. So, we do have a lot of water though. Like a lot of it, but it's underground. Whether or not it's flowing, don't ask me. Well, I'm not a geological expert or any type of expert. So today we are going to basically go in somewhat that same region of the world. Albeit today's country that's Turkmenistan. Yeah. Now one of the, you know, one of those, you know, one of the stan countries. It turns out there's a city of Awaza. You know, yeah, the city of Awaza. It's a resort city in Turkmenistan. The place is a part of a city that has a name I can't pronounce. Believe me, because, well, for one, I don't speak, you know, the official language is, Turkmen. Don't murder me. Please don't murder me. I just realized that I make a giant, you know, a giant mistake on one of my, you know, one of my documentation, but, I won't be mad at, relax. So, the event of inter-ministerial gathering that, you know, that happened earlier on this month. It started from the 5th of August and then ran all the way to the 8th of August. So it is just, I think it's safe to say earlier this month. And, ministerial, UN member states, especially those ones that are from the, developing countries, met in Awaza, Turkmenistan, where they, decided to basically talk about one of those, south to south cooperation discussions. And now, south to south is basically a fancy way because they are two, like, there, when it comes to the south to south discussion, the lingo that's more often used is, we would like to trade on a south to south, you know, basis and also on a triangular basis. That's a fancy geopolitical way of saying south to south. We would like to establish, trade relations amongst ourselves as developing countries. Hence, since the whole, division of the global north and the global south have to do with more of economic achievements than geographical location. Take Australia, for example, is one of those countries that is, I think, considered developed, but geographically it's in the global south. And now you have a lot of countries that Turkmenistan here, for example, is one of, you know, it's a, there's this cluster part of the, you know, there's this group of countries that have, they all have stan at the, you know they all have stan at the end of their names, and it turns out the word stan basically means land. So which got me thinking, Turkmenistan, does that mean a land of the Turks? And if it does, what the heck is Turkey doing on the map? But now, I know that those countries, especially, you know, the countries in that part, or, the countries in that part of the globe, and Turkey have a very touchy history, very touchy one, like one that involves, you know, genocide type of committed, you know, a very touchy one, like, yeah, that touchy. Like I pointed out earlier, as neighbors, you are going to have, a few standoffs here, you know, every now and then. Now, if your neighborliness is just you and as your small family and your neighbor and their small family, that family fight is most likely going to be, you know, well, your son is, you know, seeing my daughter privately, we all know what that means. And there's more often, depending on how strict parents are about those things, and, African parents, it's almost, if not all of them, are very strict about that. So if you are just two neighbors in one block of a street, that is most likely going to be what the fight is about. But if you are neighboring countries, the fight is most likely going to be very, large scale, as in genocide type. And we witnessed this with, 1994 with the Rwandan, with the Rwandan genocide. That's exactly what happens when large groups of people entertain their differences instead of focusing on their similarities, because we are never going to be the same. But anyway, Turkmenistan is a country in, Eastern Europe. Where you have the official language is the Turkmen, but we are not going to dive into their geographical and location and their history. Today's discussion is basically because Awaza is a place in Turkmenistan where the ministerial summit that focused on one very important thing, a conference. There's a language thing going on there. So the main topic they had there was helping countries that don't have port access. Because if we are going to trade with each other as developing countries, we will have to figure out how to do that the most, the most efficient way that we can. And obviously, as you can imagine, the discussion of technology also came up, like the application of technology with regards to trying to solve all the problems that is obviously going to pop up along the way as we try to, as developing countries, south to south, remember, as developing countries. These countries have decided, as developing countries, we can also trade with each other. Now, the thing is, if you look at developed countries, if you look at the relationship between, even post-colonial history of a lot of countries, most of their trades have always been with developed countries, not with their fellow developing countries. So now you saw a lot of developing countries that had a large part of their trade was with developed countries. And that makes a lot of economic sense, and you don't have to be an expert to figure that out. If a country is developed, that means they have a large financial security for them to pay for whatever it is that you're selling them. You don't want to, what is going on with ENACON, Ministry of Defense and NAMCO, giving people stuff and crossing your fingers and hoping they are going to pay. And when they default on their debt, now you have to, take the stand and answer a lot of questions. You're going to be standing for days. It's one of the reasons why I'm a law-abiding citizen. So, it makes a lot of business sense when you look at it. And if you look at Namibia, for example, basically just Namibia and Lesotho. Let's just use Namibia and Lesotho. Throw in South Africa in that bucket. Most of the trades that we do, especially when it comes to meat in our case, forget diamonds. Especially when it comes to meat. One of our biggest trading partners are coming out of Europe. If not, I think the EU as collective and to some degree individual countries within the EU. Why at this point you're asking if we have this product to sell to, if we have this product to sell to the EU, why not just trade it, within ourselves as developing countries? Well, I think it's what you don't have to be an economic expert to figure out is one that I just pointed out. That's the buying power that's vested in developed countries. Again, they have the finance, they have the money, they have the buying power that a lot of developing countries don't have. They have a lot of buying power, a lot of developing countries don't have. And throw on that the currency that they have. Now, if you're given two options as a businessman, now at this point, don't point fingers at any politician or any business person that you know. Picture yourself as a commercial farmer, and you are farming. Take for example, animal husbandry. You are farming with cattle, and then you had two customers approach you. One of them is coming from, take for example, Kenya or South Africa. One of them is approaching you with either the South African rand or the Kenya shilling. And then you have the Norwegians approaching you with the euro. Not only is the price they are willing to pay high, their currency is also through the roof. I'm telling you, your rand and shillings don't stand a chance in that one. Now, I don't care if you're a pastor or not. That's where you start saying things like, well, I know I'm a pastor at church, this is business, so it's a different environment. And we just, we're all very good at finding justifications when we want to go through with something that we shouldn't be going through it. But, that's basically one example that I feel like you don't need to be an economic expert to figure out. Every business person, because it makes a lot of business sense. It makes a lot of profit sense. It makes a lot of business sense. All you just have to do is sell me your stuff, and I'm not only am I willing to pay at a price higher than all the competitors, my currency is also stronger. It makes a lot of business sense that 99 to 100% of business individuals who will most likely to go with, to go that direction. But, with the establishment of the, you know, of the global south, with the, you know, global south and countries, aka developing countries, I think, developing countries is, I find that more politically correct for me to use. Developing countries, came up with a brilliant idea of, you know what, we can trade with ourselves too. So those trading agreements were signed. As you can imagine, it's very easy to sign a trade agreement, but implementing the terms and the clause and the terms and conditions within those trade agreements, that's where you have sluggishness going on, and that's not because of political tensions or maybe the lack of infrastructure. But the point is, it also has to do with the soft infrastructure. And that is the E1, e-commerce, the technology one. So to implement a piece of technology that will work for both countries, when you are both developing countries who don't manufacture most of the hardwares that you're going to use, it's kind of tricky. But now, before we get to the E version of things, we're just looking at diplomatic. I like to look at diplomacy. Now, that's because if you look at it, that's where everything starts. For a train to be built, for example, the Lubito Corridor, I'm not the only one who thinks that, should have been pulled off by the three countries rail tracks are going to run through. That's DRC, Angola, and Zambia. They have the financial power to basically pull off such investment. I think they just, first of all, they didn't have anything to monetize on from other transportation, albeit that sounds somewhat of a very flimsy excuse, because transportation itself is lucrative business. But I've never been to this area to sort of understand if there's a type of movement of people that's worth monetizing, especially for a multi-billion-dollar railway project. So Zambia is a landlocked country. So the main focus of this discussion was how to help landlocked countries that are, they call them LLD, landlocked developing countries. LLDC, something like that. So how to help landlocked developing countries, or basically how to conduct business with them. Now, more often it's being looked at as how to help developing countries have port access. I don't think we are helping them. I think it's more of helping each other. Take, for example, if take Madagascar, for example, if Madagascar wants to trade with Botswana or Zambia or Zimbabwe, because all the, you know, these three countries are landlocked. Landlocked means they don't have sea access. And for the large part, DRC, because they have a very tiny shoreline, a very tiny one. Although I think if having a shoreline, and not every shoreline is suitable for shipping. Because for ships to dock, you need very deep waters, otherwise your ships are going to be stuck. And that's a multi-billion dollar piece of hardware that someone owns. Oh dear. Now, if Madagascar would like to sell something to Botswana, the first thing they will have to figure out is, how do we get it to Botswana? Then you have two ways. You can put it on a plane and fly it, or you can put it on a ship and then ask, try it. First of all, the first thing you want to do is, if you're going to do the flying route, that's okay. You don't have a lot of, apart from the fact that it's insanely expensive and it's borderline impossible for you to carry the same quantity of shipment containers that a shipping containers can carry. No plane can do that. So that means, if you are going to trade on on a large scale trades that we see most commonly associated with shipping is only going to be pulled off with ports. You need ports. A couple of minutes into the presentation, because this is took place on the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th. It was a 4 days event. The first thing I started, the first thing that came in my head was like, ports are going to, are about to become, actually they have already become on demand on this one. Strategic locations, especially when it comes to ports that are, that are used for commercial purposes. And it's kind of difficult. Okay. I mean, it's not like you can use a port for entertainment purposes. Now, one thing that Madagascar will have to figure out is, how do I get all this? If you have seen a shipping, shipping containers, shipping vessels like Evergreen, there is not a plane on this planet that can carry that amount of cargo. If there was one, I think it would break your national budget. So the most efficient and affordable mode of transport, especially if you're dealing with large volumes of trade, is you want to ship that stuff. So if you are going to, if you are going to take it, if Madagascar is going to sell something to Botswana or Zambia or any of the African landlocked countries within the southern part of Africa, the first thing they have to find out is which country in this part of the region is in a good diplomatic relations with Botswana. I'll give you an example. Right now, especially for the most part of SADC, I think Madagascar would have a lot of options. They would go to Mozambique, I think. They wouldn't have a problem with that. But because of the political instability, they are most likely to talk to Botswana, to talk to South Africa or Namibia or Angola. Angola, that's a little far north, but also it's just in close proximity. So after finding that out, and then that's step one. How is the diplomatic tensions between diplomatic relationships between these two countries? If they have a lot of tensions going on, no businessman will want to risk, large volumes of trading cargo. And then, to sell it to a country that's at peace, but then pick a trading route that is mired in a conflict. Like, you'll have to be an idiot. If you think of it, of business that way, perhaps you shouldn't be doing business. Like, let's start with 1+1. We're going to get to business, but for now, no offense, but for now, let's start with 1+1 = 2. 2+2 = 4. 4+4 = 8. 8+8 = 16. 16+16 = 32, right? Okay, now my math just disappeared. that's as far as I can come. Leave me alone. Now, so after establishing all those, finding the right neighboring countries within the region of the countries, where the country they want to trade with is located, then they move to the next step. How is the infrastructure? Because if Madagascar ships their cargo from their country to then, their destination is Walvis Bay. From Walvis Bay, how are the roads that are, is there any road, first of all, that goes from Namibia to Botswana? What is the condition of that road? So this is where the infrastructure development now comes in very important, but the focus is on landlocked country.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot the quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Great news! Impa just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Impa? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
And welcome back. So now, what you are looking at is the conclusion can be drawn here that for this whole south to south discussion to work, all countries that would like to trade with each other, these plans cannot work in the middle of war zones. Because infrastructure development, like building a road, for example, that's a multi-million dollar project. So no one wants to build a road today and then, rebuild it again, next week because it was blown up during the weekend. Now we see the problem with conflicts. Now, this is where I feel like, when it comes to armed conflicts, there's one thing we almost always forget. Because, headlines of a conflict hits public domain and it becomes a very political thing. But, here's one very sad reality about most, if not all, conflicts across the planet. They're all tribal based. Most conflicts that have led to the death of millions of people on this planet have been tribal. It's either they're tribal or they're religious. One of the two. At this point, you're saying, no, some of it is boundary related. Look at the border. Go to that border. Ask yourself one question. What's happening in that border? What type of people live at that border? What is their treatment of the people occupying the central government? Works very hard and then find themselves in public office and then they start playing. I think, the most dangerous thing any politician can do is try to use tribal talking points to score political points. That is dangerous. All you just have to do is pick a history book and then, on any conflicts, and you'll find that most, if not all, conflicts across the planet have been because of religious differences or tribal differences. it's always one group of people looking down. That's how it starts, looking down on one tribe of people. And then some of them get so drunk on that power and dominance to the point where they start doing what we saw in Rwanda in 1994, because it started with a radio station. So for the South to South economic achievements emanating from from mass trades with each other as developing countries, for that to work, we can't afford any political instability. And we all know that for most, if not all, political instabilities to become political instabilities, more often it starts from my race is better than yours, my tribe is better than yours, my God is more forgiving and actually more powerful than yours. Bottom line, who cares? Any business person knows that if you make something that you can sell, it doesn't matter the tribe or the religion of the person whose stomach it ends up in. If it's poisonous, it doesn't matter if that person is from your tribe, they're still gonna die. If it's poisonous, it doesn't matter whether that person is a priest and they are, high up there with Moses, they're still gonna die. So, ensuring that this requires a grown-up type of discussion. So, coming back to landlocked countries discussion. So, infrastructure development is obviously central. Infrastructure development is obviously central because for you to ship this stuff, it must be at a port that has all that's equipped to unload shipping containers. Now, I don't think you can be. You can't outsource. Shipping containers, when it comes to large volumes in trading, that's where technology now comes in handy. The size of shipping containers that we have today cannot be offloaded by a bunch of guys. It doesn't matter how many times they go to the gym per week. That's a waste of money and energy. But so you need ports that are, and not only do you need ports. So now when you look at it, you begin to realize just how many pieces must be in place. First of all, you need to figure out your internal problems. What am I trading and with which country? And now, if the country that Madagascar wants to, for example, wants to trade with, or Namibia wants to trade with, is Madagascar, it's easy. All we just have to do, Madagascar is an island nation. Put everything on a ship, and then voila, they have a port. Now, but if Namibia, for example, And we have done this before. We have done this before with when we made a significant amount of money. Actually, a lot of money. We made a lot of money from sending meat to Ghana. Now, Ghana is not a landlocked country. Take for example if Niger was the customer for that meat. First of all, we would have to figure out if we are going to fly this meat. Imagine that plane crashing and now you have, meat all over the desert. That's easy frying. All you just have to do it. Niger is a desert country, so it's scattered all over the desert and well fried. All you just need is spice and salt and voila, problem Kapana solved. So, moving on. If the country that would, was sending the meat we sent to, we traded with Ghana, if we're sending it to Niger or Burkina Faso, for example, we'll have to find, where to first of all dock the ship. Which port, which countries that are neighboring the country of Burkina Faso or Niger have ports? And not having ports is not enough. Do these countries have? Having ports is not enough. does this country have a functioning road that I can use to drive my stuff either through Ivory Coast, through Liberia, or through Togo or Ghana or Nigeria for you to get to Niger? Now, this is where my example comes in of why I'm rambling about this. Well, let me tell you a short story that started, was that in 2024? In January of 2024. Now, I still have no idea and still don't understand why Ethiopia did that. See, in January of 2024, that's just a typical example for me. In January of 2024, the Ethiopian government signed one of the most controversial governments, the seat of the African Union could have signed. Like, which is why I'm saying, I don't understand why. They signed a controversial agreement with Somaliland. Now, Somaliland is breakaway republic from Somalia. Take for example Zambia is signing a trade agreement not with Namibia but with the Zambezi Strip now. That would basically make the Namibian government go bananas, and that's understandable. Somaliland is somewhat is more of a breakaway republic, like to a very high degree. Because it has its own unrecognized government basically running the whole show though. So as you can imagine, the tension between Somaliland and the government of Somalia is at all time high. So why did the government of the republic, why would Ethiopia do that? Well, it's simple. Ethiopia is a landlocked country. Ethiopia is a landlocked country. So it's one of those landlocked countries that, that can actually be used as an example. Now, Ethiopia is a landlocked country that would like to conduct trade as, like any country. The only problem is they need port access.
Hey, Helmut.
Perfect timing.
Yes, Helmut. Well, the timing was also this morning,
the only thing I have learned so far from my training.
Yeah.
Breathe. Can't believe.
We'll put it there, Helmut.
No, to think that I'm paying money to be trained how to breathe. just I really hope my supervisors are not listening.
Yeah, you should tell them. They should listen to us.
They should
listen to Herman and Dwight here on the Home Run, specifically on Eagle FM. They should download the app. They should do everything. They should go through the whole shebang. They should subscribe to the
Village.
Yeah, they should read the insightful knowledge that we always share and disperse with our readers and listeners, because it's listeners and readers at the same time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they should go through the whole shebang. They should even, follow us on our socials. Do the whole dance, Helmut. The whole 100 yards, not 9 yards, 100 yards. Because they should go full out.
I was just in the middle of explaining the ministerial conference that took place in Awaza.
In Ooh. Turkmenistan.
Yeah.
If you guys didn't know.
Yeah, Awaza, Turkmenistan. So, also the emphasis on, landlocked countries that was made. And I think why that is a very important point to make if we are going to trade with each other is developing countries. And that's because, if we are going to trade with each other on a national level, we are talking about, large volumes of goods that are going to move from one country to another. Mm. Goods that can only be moved by ship.
Only by ship.
You can fly them, but no.
Oh, I thought you said sheep.
Not farm, not cabana sheep.
Sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
I have that talent. Ask Chicken. I'm always throwing him off course.
Hey, let's leave chicken alone. You know,
he
has enough on his hands in terms of interpreting sheep.
Oh, turkey. Yeah, that one also. It was like, do you mean the bird or the canary? I'm like, oh man, seriously. Yeah, now.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm picturing, domestic animals with shipping containers on. Now.
With hoofed animals. And they're bleating on their way.
Might be animal abuse.
Yeah.
Welcome to the language of English.
Welcome to the home run. Yeah. We always put a smile on your face during the drive time. Yeah.
So. If you look, the example that I've also, at least the angle I'm looking at it from is, look at ships like, like Evergreen, for example.
Mm.
It's one of the biggest shipping vessels. And, I can't imagine that cargo on any plane. But before continue, commercial break.
The best connections and moments are worth remembering, don't you think? Grab one of our great-tasting non-alcoholic drinks, Heineken, Savannah, Vintook Original, or Vintook Lemon, anytime, anywhere. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitution.
Welcome back. The time is 16 minutes past the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And we're here until the hour of 6, your drive time show, mixing, economic discussions, geopolitical, let's go with diplomatic, discussions with a little bit of, humor here and there, to spice things up. But before we continue, let's take a live read.
The Vavice University new short courses that are available. Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education from the School of Science Program, Certificate in Workplace Dispute Resolution. Admission requirements are a Grade 12 Senior Certificate or an equivalent NQF Level 4 with a minimum of 18 points in 5 best subjects and a D symbol in English. Or a Grade 11 Certificate with a minimum of 22 points in 5 subjects and a D symbol in English, plus a 2 years relevant industry experience that would be required. The course cost is $5,500. Application period from 1 August to 31 August 2025. For more information, call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462 or email at admissions@wu.edu.na. Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever.
And we continue. So, large volumes of trade, of trading goods. I think to move that, you have two options. It's either to fly it or to ship it. But flying is going to break your budget.
Remember, Helmut, this is about the landlocked countries.
Because
even though Namibia, in its right, we developed the transport corridor thing to help the landlocked countries around us.
Yeah.
Zambia, Zimbabwe, Botswana. Who else was there? I don't know if DRC comes through us. I don't know. But
yeah, I think so. But I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Whether they come through us or Angola.
Yeah.
Wait, how long
no,
is...
No, but they've got their own... They've got a coastline.
That coastline is from here to the gate. But... My baba is from DRC.
Yeah, no, yo! I haven't seen such a shoot down in a long while.
Look! For a country the size of DRC,
yeah,
you'd really expect them to have a shoreline because the Congo River, one of the one of the deepest
rivers. Yeah,
yeah, rivers.
You can actually sail with a decent sized ship. Sail up the river. To Kinshasa. And Brazzaville, which is on the opposite end of the. It's most the river that's so wide you can't see the other side. In the Amazon.
Yeah, it's coming. Yeah, it's coming from deep within the DRC, of course, with a lot of tributaries in between. You know, somewhere in the middle, and it pours into the into the Atlantic Ocean. So that's still part of DRC. I think I still have to find out if DRC has a port, and more information basically with regards to their very tiny shoreline. One of their main challenges, as you can imagine, is that they're in the tropical area. They're most likely to have this very nice sandy beach area, but that's not very conducive for shipping. You need a very deep waters for ships to dock, for you to put a port on. Otherwise, then you'll be dealing with no one will want to risk their ships at your shore. Because then they'll be there, parking forever.
The other concern, obviously, Helmut, is like, if you look at DRC's neighbor, the other Congo.
Brazzaville. Yeah.
They don't have a shoreline. They only have that river as an access point. They don't have a shoreline. Remember, it's must now, is it Equatorial Guinea?
Yeah.
Or is it Guinea-Bissau? One of the two Guineas that they border on with Gabon.
With Gabon, that must be Equatorial Guinea.
Yeah. So, that's the two countries that is.
Hang on a second. Gabon. Yeah. Equatorial Guinea.
So, those are the two countries that literally would be boxing in the Congo Brazzaville.
Yeah.
Now, Namibia, obviously, we developed the transport corridor because any Namibians, obviously, if you're driving up and down Namibia's motorway, specifically here between Windhoek, Otjiwarongo, Windhoek to the coast, Windhoek to Gobabis, you guys keep seeing the other number-plated trucks from Zimbabwe and from Zambia and some from Botswana. I mean, even the fuel, Helmut, fuel supply to Botswana, you also see those particular trucks.
Corridor.
Yeah. So you can see the facilitation we as Namibia play. But here's a unique thing. The starting point of all of this, what I mean by all of this, this whole particular discussion, this obviously all started somewhere, like a couple of years back, specifically in 2023. They had a preparatory committee for the third UN conference on landlocked developing countries. Obviously, the current conference scenario that's taking place since last week into this week, they're obviously trying to find important things, and what we started on for today's program was a scenario of the ministerial get together in terms of finding the solutions for the future for these landlocked countries. Do you know what was one of the particular things, Helmut, that they cited here in terms of in the assessment in this report? It's known as the Gaborone outcome document. It's one of the three documents that helps with this conference. They cited here specifically that they noted how devastating COVID-19 was on the movement of goods, specifically if you're landlocked.
Yeah.
Because Namibia would close down its borders, and how would you get your goods?
So those those borders, including all borders, both land and sea.
Yeah. Around around your country.
So your goods can't get in.
Your goods can't get in. Another scenario was that they obviously noted that some African countries, including some landlocked developing nations, have either built new airports or rehabilitated several old ones. On top of this, the AU launched its single African air transport market, which you cited already.
Yeah.
Meaning you can either you can either send it by boat or you can only fly it.
Yeah.
Now the flying obviously is that you can't use that massive, what's that Ukrainian plane or that Russian plane?
Antonov.
Yeah, the Antonov. Now, that's must now something else.
How much is that gonna cost you though? Because, last time isn't that like the only plane of its size?
It is. There's actually another one, but it's a Chinese one. And there's another Antonov, of earlier version of it, the one that is most abandoned somewhere in the Black Sea.
Oh, yeah.
It's so big, its tail and its wing sticks out of the water.
So. I think the Soviets thinking.
Hey man, they were thinking, you know what? The quickest way to get there, put the thing in a plane, fly it there. Okay, how big does that plane have to be for that tank? Oh, okay. We'll come up. And then tomorrow they show up with this lovely, big, massive whale of a plane.
mm-hmm.
that literally can, I think in one thing, in one flight, it can circumnavigate the world, right? That thing is so big, it can literally fly on one tank. That it's literally one tank, you know,
well,
meaning this.
Well, multiple tanks, like every plane, like on one fuel.
One fuel supply can literally fly around the Earth. Which is a problematic thing to say.
Yeah, I'm not sure. flying stuff is,
Has always been the most expensive.
Like, Airbus, for example, have to, the fuselage of a plane. They take that thing and then put it on a plane. It's like putting a plane on a plane. Just remove the wings and put it on a plane. They fly them. But they have their own plane that's basically designed
to fly
specifically for that.
To fly parts.
Yeah. It's called the...
If you've got Lockerbie scenarios,
It's called the, Airbus... it's called the Airbus Beluga, and some of them have been used.
It looks like an Air Beluga.
It does.
Like a beluga whale.
Well, some people on social media have been using that plane to make fun of East Africans. But the thing is...
No.
Look, my part of social media is not a very healthy one.
I know why,
You're welcome. People are mean on social media.
No, vicious. Mean.
Everyone is a professional at the office. On social media, people are mean.
Yeah.
They have a plane that's basically dedicated to flying, and they can only fly one fuselage at a time. You can imagine the logistical nightmare and the cost. And God forbid that thing crashes. And now transporting, obviously, if you are going to fly stuff, flying it once, maybe that will do. But if you are trying to establish a sort of like a trading routes where you'll have to fly things every now and then, that doesn't make a lot of business sense.
Yep.
Yeah. So shipping then makes a lot of sense in this regard.
Which also means that, if such an activity helmet was on a micro level positioned to a SOE.
Yeah.
The costs would balloon out of control. Almost immediately.
You bet.
Do you know what's some of the particular things in this Khabarona statement that they also noted?
Yeah.
I'll read the first one. They noted that infrastructure in landlocked developing countries for production, transmission and distribution of modern and renewable energy services have been expanded and upgraded, but more than 60% of these African landlocked developing countries' population still do not have access to electricity, and the rural-urban supply gap remains significant, which is a Namibian statement. That's you can see Namibia in that statement.
Yeah.
The other one was they recognize, obviously we have to take out the word we, they recognize that the participation of landlocked developing countries in regional and sub-regional trade, transport, and transit facilitation agreements and initiatives that are aimed at deepening regional integration enhances infrastructure connectivity and facilitates movement of cargo across borders, and this has increased. Now, this is back in 2023 when this document was written. Now, it's obviously based upon, you can see Namibia's transport corridor in action.
Yeah.
We are facilitating for our neighbors. We're not there to I don't want to call us greedy or anything, but we're not there as mean people or the mean squad, but we ultimately do have an aspect of actually positioning ourselves as the most favored transport corridor to be made use of.
I think
until the Lupito corridor is finished.
I pointed to most of these things earlier. The thing is, there are a lot of things to consider here. Infrastructure, the physical infrastructure is one of them. But also, it's going to start with diplomatic relations between the countries that you'd like to go through. If you look at the example that I used, when you were just stepping in, was that of the attention that the seat of the African Union started back in 2024.
Yeah.
Yeah, by striking an agreement between Ethiopia and Somaliland, which really understandably pissed off the Somali, the Somali government.
Mm.
And believe it or not, I cannot believe Ethiopia did that, because the agreement was, Ethiopia gains access to Somaliland.
Mm.
So for them to have sea access through the Red Sea.
Yeah.
And in return, Ethiopia will help Somaliland advocate for their self-determination, for them to be established as a as a state on their own, for basically international recognition.
Yeah.
I was like, huh? Someone basically said and thought that was a brilliant idea.
And then obviously annoyed Somalia.
They are still annoyed.
They are still annoyed. Yeah.
Commercial break.
Do you want to stand a chance of winning a 500 Namibian dollar gift voucher courtesy of ShopRite USave? Then simply tell us, what is the ShopRite Namibia website? Send your answers in a WhatsApp message to 081-200-4144. That's 081-200-4144. Tune in this Friday from 1:45 to hear if you are this week's lucky winner. You save, I save, we all save at USave.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Vintook Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Vintook Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Vintook Beer, and you could win. Vintook, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Welcome back. 29 minutes left to the hour of 6. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight here on Eagle FM. So,
landlockedness.
Yeah. So that obviously, as you can imagine, Somaliland, Ethiopia, political problem that they have there. Like, at this point, you can imagine, the Ethiopians sat there then were like, how do we have access to the sea? How are we going to have access to the sea?
Yeah.
And when you look at Somalia and Ethiopia, Ethiopia on the map, you see that they have Djibouti, which has more military bases, foreign military bases than there are people.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have they have Somalia, and they have Kenya. They could have gone through Kenya, but one thing I don't understand is the Ugandan oil pipeline.
Mm.
If you ask me, it could have gone through Kenya, but it didn't. Like the reasonable shortcut that everyone can look, if you look up the pipeline, the route that's projected to take, it's running through Tanzania, which is a very long route. Now, the question I kept asking myself since I looked up, the pipeline's route that's going to take this afternoon was that it's going through Tanzania.
Yeah.
Now, it could have gone through Kenya, which would have been a much shorter route, but no, they didn't. I can imagine there's a political, diplomatic explanation for that. Now, Ethiopia is actually, I don't know how we just said then, say the Ethiopia is going to be the seat of the African Union, because, I mean, they have...
After they had a civil war.
They have Djibouti here, they have Eritrea here, they have...
The civil war then came back.
The two Sudans on one side, just blowing the heck out of each other.
Exactly. In between, they were neighboring on to a lifelong president whose family keeps reinterpreting what governance is or government looks like. I mean, even his son reinterpreted the aspect in terms of who should be charged where, under what court. It's actually funny that Namibia turned to Uganda for an information for a digital court management system, Helmut. And this is literally the country I sat through that presentation going like, but the other day, your president's son wanted to charge people in the military courts.
I think their justice system really wants to do the right thing, because which is why they have been against the prosecution of civilians in military courts.
Yeah.
The thing is, I think that's where abuse of executive power now, if you ask me, comes in.
Which it is.
So now you find yourself in the judiciary branch, which again defeats the whole purpose of separation of powers. Mm. If you don't have the separation of powers, aka the judiciary, does their thing, the parliament does their thing, which is just making laws, and the executive does their thing, well, then just combine the whole thing and call it a monarchy.
Mm.
Yeah. So
and then just have a bunch of guys reporting to the same guy.
With
veto power
of the highest order, prosecution, whimsically prosecution and execution. That's the direction that this whole thing's take.
Yeah.
So a lot of countries, on the African continent are landlocked.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, Dwight, if you look at the African map, what you're going to see is that, trying to assist landlocked countries with port access is going to be very difficult the further up north the continent you go.
Actually, yeah, the countries actually get bigger, eh? And the size the size of the continent also gets bigger.
Yeah, the size of the continent gets bigger. The countries also by landmass gets bigger.
Mm.
And then that's not the biggest problem.
Mm.
Political instability.
Always.
Yeah.
Okay, Kenya has always been trying to play good neighbor and sort of like as the go-to mediator of disputes. It was obviously we saw the template in DRC where Tshisekedi was like, okay, you're coming to fight for me, ne? And Uhuru before Ruto was like...
No, you didn't get me, Cole.
No, brah, we are peace. Peace mission, peacekeeping. We are here to keep the peace. Oh, okay, then go back to your country.
Or I'm going to fight you.
Yeah. So we've obviously seen how that has gone. The other countries technically disrespected Kenya's peacekeeping efforts. I always believe, Helmut, if you find one country... trying to be a mediator, a go-to, sort of like the person putting the whole peace negotiations together.
Yeah.
And you've got two guys that are so belligerent, they're like, nah, I don't want to talk to that guy. Why must I come to the peace conference? So you don't want peace, in essence?
It's something that has to do with understanding, the misunderstanding of diplomacy. We always go into negotiations with "I'm going to win this type of," "I'm going to win this type of mentality." And if you are going to now, and that's the basics of conflict resolution or dispute resolution is step number one is mostly negotiations.
Mm.
Now, the first thing you are told is, if your goal is to negotiate, going into a negotiation room with the point of, I'm going to empower them so that I can only drive only my points across. That's how war starts.
Empower or overpower.
Yeah. That's how war starts.
Yeah. Yeah, you are right. I mean, some of the
things. No one wants to compromise.
Yeah. Some of the things I even learned in, for example, like in, even a negotiation, if you go and meet a client or you go and meet someone else.
Yeah.
And you have to present something to them, meaning they ask you, okay, let's say, yes, let's have the meeting. And they will ask you when you are busy setting the meeting, why should we meet? And then you obviously motivate, you explain.
Yeah, this and.
I want to have a meeting with you because I want to do this and this and this. You know, I want you either to buy media space or we'd like to partner with you on something. Yeah. And they say, okay, yeah, you can come. Date and time, you organize that, then you go. So you sorted out the formalities beforehand, which indicates a level of some format of respect.
Yeah.
With the other party. So now you get there. And then the person tells you on that side, sorry, I've got another meeting. Can we reschedule? Literally as you walk into the door on the time frame that you are there.
Oh, worse. You ran into the secretary. Well, he just left
me. She just left.
Yeah. Well, she was urgent.
And then you ask, did they call me? Did they leave a message? Anything? And then they even tell you, no, you have to call them back to set another thing. And then obviously, in that scenario, I know I'm using a completely different micro example, dear listeners, of everyday interactions. But imagine this particular scenario on even, for let's say, nation to nation. One country is trying to extend an olive branch and the other one is just like, nah, nani. Nah, I don't want to talk to you.
The lack of negotiation skills is something that I see, in a lot of industries. If you look at what we do, we basically, read through a bunch of information and basically, make topics out of them. And most of them are more economic oriented. The reason why I find that very interesting is that I've read a lot of stories of individuals. Now the gentleman, the gentleman that came up with the digital, with the digital pictures, approached Kodak. He was working for Kodak.
Yeah.
He told them, okay, I have an idea here that could revolutionize how we take pictures. They said, you'd be putting us out of business because we sell films. If we replace that with something digital, we don't have anything to sell. Ipso facto, we are out of business.
Yeah.
And that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Except they didn't think it through. What happens if this individual goes to our competitors?
Or takes this idea, he sells it off to someone else.
Yeah.
Which he did.
Which he did. Sony took it and then perfected it
and then
their biggest fear was that if they entertain the idea, they will be out of business.
Mm.
And well, guess what happened? They didn't entertain the idea and they are out of business.
Mm-hmm.
And, the same thing happened with the gentleman that, with the gentleman that wrote the movie, Shrek.
Yeah.
He was working for Disney.
And then he took the idea for Shrek somewhere else.
He took the idea. This was basically a veteran with Disney. He produced some of the best plays coming out of Disney. The best movies coming out of Disney. So he just told them to giving him royalties on those movies or some types of compensation beyond the salaries that were paying him. They're like, yeah, no, we're not doing that. He left.
Mm.
Partnered up with Steven Spielberg, Shrek went boom. Mm.
I think it's like four movies or what?
I think they're about four. I stopped at three. I need more popcorns to handle the donkey's laugh.
To handle the donkey's jokes. That's the issue.
Yeah, the donkey's jokes. Look, Eddie Murphy nailed it on that one. But the thing is, more often, I think, the biggest fears that a lot of our fears tend to come whether we like it or not, especially with the Kodak example.
Mm.
The biggest fear was that if they entertain digital film innovation, they are going to be out of business because, well, they will no longer sell film. Well, guess what? The technology took over. They are out of business. Maybe in taking the idea, they could have adopted it in a controllable way that will still incorporate them in its development.
Yeah.
But no, they didn't. I know it's painful, but yeah, such is life. So now back to the discussion of landlocked countries. Infrastructure development does not need mentioning in this, does not need mentioning here. That's because, even if, take for example, you want to take a cargo to Chad.
Mm.
Yeah, but now Chad is a landlocked country. Or Nigeria. Nigeria is a landlocked country. Nigeria has a port. Chad doesn't have a port. Mm. So for you to reach them, you'll have to either talk to the, you'll have to either talk to the Cameroonians. You'll either have to talk to the, you'll have to talk to the, Nigerians.
Mm.
Now, the thing is, the Cameroonians and the Nigerians having ports for you to dock the ships that's carrying your cargo is not enough. Is there a road that runs from that port to Chad? And if there is no port, if there is no road, then it's up to, that's basically on them to build that if they want to, if they want to conduct trade with countries that are, conduct trade with other countries. And then that now brings up another discussion. Infrastructure and political instability do not get along.
Mm.
I don't want to build a road that gets blown up every 5 minutes. Commercial break.
At ShopRite, we're celebrating 35 years of lower prices with unbeatable deals. Let's mark the occasion with savings on essentials like 2 kg nice rice, parboiled rice for just $39.99. 250 grams Nescafe Ricoffee instant coffee, only $69.99. Valid until 17 August 2025. Don't miss out on these deals. ShopRite, lower prices you can trust, always. Stand to win your groceries for free at ShopRite. Buy any 3 participating products. Find the unique code on your till slip. WhatsApp it to us and see if you're a winner. Plus, there are instant daily prizes to be won. Only at ShopRite.
So infrastructure development and armed conflicts do not get along. And for anyone to basically establish trading relationship with a country, the first thing they want to know is, once my cargo lands in your country, how safe is it from kabooms? Unfortunately for
Is this a scenario? You are the landlocked country.
Yeah.
And let's say I'm now the kabooming country.
Mm-hmm.
And the cargo has to move through the kabooming territory.
Yeah.
Yeah, you are completely
no right. No businessman in their right mind would do that.
Well, if you remember, God of War, what's the guy's name?
Oh,
Lord of War. The
who's this guy?
The Nicolas Cage movie.
Nicolas Cage movie. Victor Bout.
Yeah, and what was the other one of the other two actors of the Iraq War? War Dogs.
Oh yeah, War Dogs.
War Dogs was also the same thing about supplying weapons. Were there to drive with pistols and 9mm ammunition from one side of Iraq to the other side of Iraq with just a little truck.
Look, War Dogs, I know that the movie War Dogs is based on a real life story of why you shouldn't give a bunch of 20-year-olds a multi-million dollar contract.
They were tenderpreneurs, bro.
yeah, they were, but they got drunk on the money.
Do you know what's the worst part? Their seed capital, the financier, all he needed to do was show them, for them to get most of the contracts, they needed to show the procurement authority of the MOJ, of the DOJ, the DOD, Department of Defense,
yeah,
that they've got at least a bank account of 10 million.
Yeah.
They just needed to show that to get
they didn't even have that?
Oh yes, they did use the money because they used the money to pay for the driver and to buy the guns.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got most of the cash. They got most of the money in cash at the army base.
Yeah.
So there was no bank transfer, no things of saying, please in my bank. They had to also go
bank
and
bank transfer to Iraq.
No, from Iraq, bruh. There's no internet. The army switched off the internet. So they had to go and collect their cash. They had to collect the payment in cash. While delivering the thing. And because the American army was of such a nature, no, it was the American Navy. It was, because they were Marines. It was those Marines
God,
that they
that's
used.
Dangerous.
So those guys had to stand there and count the, was it 14 or 25 million?
Somewhere in that range. I know, it's a lot of money because you are buying military hardware here.
No, they delivered. Remember after they were chased by the first remnants of ISIS. You remember those guys that chased them with the three of them, the driver and the two of them with the pistols. They had to, when they got to the base, what was the guy that did the payments, the soldier, told them, okay, now stand and wait. They had to stand there for like 3 hours, seeing as the money is being counted. Because the American army goes with money.
Yeah. I think that explains why, look, if I was American, that would have explained to me why the, you know, why the Pentagon keeps missing, you know.
Audit.
An audit for 5 or 6 years consecutively?
They kept failing.
Failing in
audit reviews, yeah.
Yeah. But that's hardly surprising if you are running a lot of secret military bases, aka black sites. You can't have an invoice of a black site, otherwise then it won't be a black site.
Everyone will come and ask in a congressional hearing. Mm-hmm. So where was this? where is this place? Please explain.
The establishment of of ports to access landlocked countries. For me, it's going to be, you know, the biggest fork in the road for implementing that idea will be diplomatic relations between the two countries. Mm. One that has a port and the one that doesn't. If you want to trade with Ethiopia, for example, and you ask Ethiopians if you can, the government of Somalia if you can use their port, they'll be like, huh? No! Last time we checked, we still have disagreement with those guys because they are negotiating with a breakaway republic here that's not recognized by the UN or the AU. Now, looking at it from the AU, now the first question, I can't help asking myself is, what was Ethiopia's idea though to push for the international recognition of Somaliland? To start pushing for them at the AU and then the UN?
This is as someone is obviously trying to interfere with Somali internal affairs. It's straightforward stuff, Helmut. It's the same thing. I can't understand why the whole of Africa, even us Namibia, we are suddenly recognizing Western Sahara.
Huh? That's still my favorite part.
Western Sahara. What?
You know, there is something called judicial precedence. That is a very... Okay, look at this one. if you recognize a breakaway republic, then you are opening up in a way. I'm not a diplomatic expert, but I feel like you are opening up a can of worms. Because every country has political tensions in its country. You will have a group of people that feel like there's a certain part of the country that should break away and become a sovereign state.
Mm.
Every country has that. Now, if you are going to start recognizing that, I don't know a thing about the history of Western Sahara and all that, but is that I feel like you take a direction of doing recognitions like that, then Somaliland will be like recognize me too.
No, it's the same thing also with these.
The Zambezi region will be like we also want to be a sovereign nation.
Because where this thing actually started from was in 1973. There was they call it the Polisario Front, and we back such a thing?
You know what's the biggest problem?
That was against the Spanish even. When the Spanish were in control of Morocco. And when it became the Kingdom of Morocco, these guys were still saying, we want our freedom, we want our freedom. But the King of Morocco has a constitution and all those things and says, this is all of us. I still don't understand why are we recognizing this territory?
Me neither.
If then Morocco could have done the same thing by lifting a, what do you call that thing? A suggestion at or a motion or whatever
at the AU.
At the AU level to help in support of Zambezi.
Well, now on, we also recognize the Zambezi. That would have sent us fuming through the ears.
Exactly. Exactly. Yamut.
So they say don't throw stones if you live in a glass house. That is true. Now,
I mean, hey, man.
Now I think when it comes, I think when it comes to trade, there are a lot of things to consider. And again, now trading requires shipping. If it's something that you want to continue doing, it requires shipping. Mm. And shipping requires ports. Mm. And for the cargo to reach the retail, the retail stores and the consumers, trucks comes in handy on that one.
Road networks.
Trucks need road networks. Or you can build a railway line, like we can see with the Lobito Corridor.
Mm.
Except we're not there yet.
Mm.
Yeah, we're not there yet.
And you are
right. But the goal is to get there, though.
You are right, Hamoud. I mean, no country wants to see the cargo that is essential for their economy having to pass through a conflict zone, or the infrastructure in a conflict zone is continuously blown to bits.
Now, there are constant renovations and constant delays.
And which causes the delays. Yes. And no one wants to see those things. And even though the whole of these documents that we've got here from that south-to-south discussion in terms of the landlocked countries, how they could be assisted, has been a scenario of the impact that COVID-19 has had on how the movement of goods, the movement of services, and even other essential elements needed in an economy were delayed and slowed down. So you don't even need a conflict scenario even. You just need one massive event like a COVID-19 pandemic again to literally cripple many economies in the world, which are landlocked countries. So yeah, we've got 5 more minutes to go, dear listeners.
Before we disappear, something that was made by the director of, UN CTAD, because I.
Oh, CTAD.
Yeah.
The Commission on Trade and Development.
UN CTAD. That's what I'm calling. the director, the lady pointed out, Kigali Logistics Platform Connectivity Development Project. And the objective of Kigali Logistics, that's coming from the World Bank. The objective of the Kigali Logistics Platform Connectivity Development Projects for Rwanda is to improve resilience and safe connectivity from the Kigali Logistics Platform at Musaka to the regional logistics corridor and support local and regional economic connectivities around the corridors. So Rwanda itself is a landlocked country. So it knows that for it to conduct trade with countries that are not its neighbors, it needs, especially when it comes to African countries that are far from it, like we are, for example. If we want to trade with them, because we don't have a very good rail network across the continent of Africa, I feel like that would be an excellent way to do it. But the problem is, how often do we have to renovate it, considering the regions is going to run through?
The hotspots. Look, I understand. I love the idea, Hamoud, if when Egypt at the start of the year started with their side of committing a multi-billion-dollar investment package to a high-speed rail system, which forms part of the AU's infrastructure pillar discussion for transport, to develop a high-speed rail system across the continent. The downside is, I have not heard from a SADC perspective about a high-speed rail discussion. Lobito Corridor has been spoken of. Yeah, we will carry your iron ore and your copper ore from point A in Kasumbalesa. We'll carry it through to Lobito in Angola.
Yeah.
What? What? And it runs through multiple towns, ne?
Yeah.
From Zambia into DRC, that small corner of DRC,
yeah.
Turns left and heads westwards into Angola, passing multiple towns.
Yeah.
Like I've said before, when we had a discussion last year about the Lobito Corridor, it would be a wonderful opportunity to expand tourism there through passenger railway.
No one thought of that.
No one thought of it. And the railway lines obviously would be expanded because passenger rail would need their designated lane or their designated line.
Yeah.
And a freight transport or freight railway would need its designated line.
Yeah.
You know, you hit multiple... multiple birds with one stone.
No, the painful thing about, you know, being an African is you get to witness, someone come from outside and invest the amount of money in a transport system that is available on the continent and then watch everyone on the continent go like, I want 100% stake in that business. And it'll be like, what?
Or like our new minister of mines has said at last week's mining expo, Namibia plans to have 51% ownership in future mining enterprises. I went like, huh?
No.
And they forget the 300 million seismic seismic survey price tag. 300 million Namibian dollars. Helmut.
Look, I'm not saying, we don't have the money.
Look. My guy, it's not even...
At least I said that with a straight face.
It's not even... We are still in exploration phase. Helmut, you're not even there to chop, you know, to say, I'm now putting a pick into the ground to get the thing out. It's not even at that level. 300 million for seismic surveys. And then what was the other thing that you said? We started an SOE with 1 million.
I think that was... I swear.
Hey man, we're the best. You know, we write new rules. Not that anyone recognizes those rules, but we just write them.
Look, I've come to learn that, one of the reasons why a lot of people don't understand, most of my jokes.
Or Namibia.
In Namibia.
No, they also don't understand Namibia.
Because most, because that one, for example, that's sending you rolling.
Yeah.
Guess where I got that one from?
Yeah. From where?
Robert Sherman.
Of course. I read it also.
Introduction to Namibian Economy.
You know, when you made that statement, I went and bought the book as well because I wanted to see, does this thing stand here?
Congratulations.
And when I found, I was like, remember, I came back like the next week. And I was like, Helmut, you really, it's in this book? Literally.
$1 million. Not a tax shop. A mine.
Mining company.
Mining company. And
it's a bit in mining.
Look, I really like the idea that we just showed up with $1 million and then we're like, the rest, we are just opening it up for anyone who is interested and has the financial power to invest in. But you know what happens in that scenario? Mm. Someone will come with more than $1 million
US.
And guess what they're going to have? They're going to have a larger stake.
And then they're going to say, I want concessions. I want subsidies. I need support for the money I'm putting at risk.
Yeah.
So.
Land of the brave. Look.
Yeah, I mean, you can already see where the stumbling blocks are going to come from. Or you can see it a mile away.
It's not rocket science.
Mm.
I think the first thing to just put in mind is investing. Investing means risking money. Now, I think this is where the Knight Templar motto now comes in. No risk, no reward.
Mm.
Yeah. So, I feel like we are going to have to look. This is where I like to say that. I have a problem with someone being corrupt. But someone being corrupt and then investing that money somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah, just be corrupt and then invest the money here.
Yeah.
Yep. Because then, I mean, you're going to be standing for hours in cross-examination, but, you know, at least you'll have, created some kind of opportunities at home. Now, I like to approach the subject of corruption that way because, first of all, I'm not naive or, you know, to believe that we are going to obliterate corruption 100%. There is no country on the planet that's going to pull that off because, well, we are people. Greed is inherent with us, unfortunately. When we are put in a situation where we'll have to choose whose interest to prioritize, whether ours or someone else's, we are almost always going to pick ours.
Yeah.
It's very easy to say otherwise when you are not in a position when you, where you have to make that decision. But more often, most of us, well, will call on air and start complaining about corruption. But if we were in the same ministerial or executive position, we are most likely going to do the exact same thing, if not worse.
Yeah.
So that's why, I feel like, on the African continent, a lot of people have a lot of money. If you look at the thing, you know, if you look at all the properties that's owned overseas, like the son of Equatorial Guinea's president, who is now, I think, the vice president. He bought Michael Jackson's diamond glove for multi-million dollars. And then had a fleet of cars. I think he had a Koenigsegg.
That was arrested in Paris.
He had a Koenigsegg. He had an Agera. He had a Bugatti. One headlight on one of these cars will get you a brand new car from pretty much, if not any dealership in this country. Now.
Wait, one of those cars will get you so much money you can buy a fleet of one car.
A headlight?
A headlight.
A headlight of a Bugatti.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. Even the tire. Yeah. Even just getting the mechanic to the car.
Yeah.
Is five new cars. It's the same for the Rolls, what's the Rolls?
Rolls Royce, yeah.
Or was it the?
Oh, Bentley.
The Bentleys.
Yeah.
The guys in Namibia that have one of those. There's no Rolls Royce. There's only Bentley.
I've seen one Rolls Royce.
It's a big car, Helmut.
Yeah.
But the mechanic has to fly in. You, the client of the car. Mechanic has to fly in.
So you're covering the wait, he's not driving, he's flying.
He's flying.
So his plane ticket is on you.
His accommodation is on you.
Okay.
The guy had to fly in, cause I remember placing those ads. The guy had to fly into Walvis. So you take your car to Walvis.
That broke down in Divundu.
Yeah. Or the car needs an oil change and you live in Vundu. The guy goes to Walvis.
Jeez.
I remember I used to place the ads. I used to, for the agency that would place the ads from South Africa. The guy would fly in.
Yeah, I'm going to stick to Japanese engineering on this one.
You are right. I mean, just one headlight of a Bugatti yesterday.
Now, when you combine a Koenigsegg Agera, McLaren, I think was that a P1? I'm not sure. And but the Bugatti was a Veyron.
Yeah.
I'm like, yo, homeboy has money.
Yeah, it's the oil money of the country.
Now, just take that money, invest it in projects like this, and then you can make even more money.
But do you think they listened? Because he was Minister of Oil, remember?
Look. I really love the hymn. this is why I like, this is why I like George Carlin's, George Carlin's works.
Mm.
Because he just tries to look at at human nature.
Mm.
We are all very self-serving. Very self-serving.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to be here cooking the guy right now, but if you put me in that position, chances are very high I'll be doing much worse.
Mm.
So when it comes to wrap it up with regards to this, ministerial, conference that took place in Turkmenistan.
Mm. It's still ongoing.
It's still ongoing.
Yeah, it lasts from last week into this week.
I think it
ends tomorrow, the 14th.
Wait, I thought it ended on the 8th.
On the one session, this one about the south to south.
Oh, yeah.
But the overall landlocked conference.
Uh-huh.
is the one that lasts from last week into this week.
Okay. Yeah. So the thing is, all the projects that we have, especially development wise,
yeah,
is very anti-political instability. I mean, there's no point of you electrifying the rural communities and then a civil war breaks out, everything is torn down, 2 years down the line. The dust settles and you have to rebuild again. Like, you're gonna need a lot of money. And one thing, anyone that have even watched a documentary of war knows just how expensive wars are. That's because military hardwares are expensive. That's because military conflict areas are very dangerous. So anyone that's going to take you in there is going to ask for a very large price because they are putting their lives on the line.
Yeah.
And that's minus the impact that's going to have on your workforce.
That's if you still have a workforce.
Yeah. And the painful thing is we are looking at Ukraine right now. And just coming to understand why armed conflict is a bad idea.
It is always a bad idea.
It's always a bad idea.
It always is.
9 minutes into the hour of six, so helping landlocked countries to access, doing business with them is going to require, just from the basics, infrastructure development. And that's before you get to the e-commerce, which is now, I think, was pointed out by one gentleman from, not the Lesotho guy, whose name was terribly mispronounced. I was like, huh, okay. But until tomorrow, same time, same place. On Eagle FM.
On that note, dear listeners, enjoy the rest of your programming in our company after the break. Herman and I obviously will evacuate ourselves.
And joining you is David with Business and Economic Segment.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.